Okay, everybody, hi, and good afternoon. We're going to continue now with the beginning of the book, Externalization of the Hierarchy. And we're on the third program. I'm calling it 03A. So we've been asking ourselves some questions. How shall we train our sensitives and psychics so the dangers can be avoided and men can go safely forward to their new and glorious heritage? And then, let's see. Right. The second question, how can esoteric schools or disciplines, as they are sometimes called, make right use of the opportunity? So, we're on page 10, and the first subject will be the training and safeguarding of our psychics, because they can be of great value once properly trained. But let's see what he says here about that training. So, the training of psychics. The first thing to be borne in mind is that negative, unintelligent mediumship and psychism reduces its exponent to the level of an automaton. The will is gone, the control is gone. It is dangerous and inadvisable because it deprives man of his free will and his positivity, and militates against his acting as a free and intelligent, as a free, intelligent human being. The man is not acting in these cases as a channel for his own soul, but is little better than an instinctual animal if he is not literally an empty shell which an obsessing entity can occupy and use. When speaking thus, I am dealing with the very lowest type of animal mediumship, of which there is far too much these days, and which is the cause of concern to the best minds in all the movements which foster mediumship. So, let's understand the undesirability of this low type of instinctual psychism. Yeah. It's not the type of sensitivity that the hierarchy is seeking to cultivate in normally psychically sensitive people. A mediumship which is entered into with a fully conscious focused attitude, and in which the medium knowingly and intelligently vacates his body to an entering entity of whom he is fully aware and who takes possession with his conscious permission in order to serve some spiritual end and help his fellow men can be right and good. But how often is this type of mediumship seen? Well, think about the developments of the petals in the egoic lotus. The Virgo petal, if we proceed in order, the outer tier would be Aries, Taurus, Gemini, and the central tier, Cancer, Leo, Virgo. We're told that the conscious mediums are found very often with a strong Virgo influence. They are self-possessed. We're also told that only with the complete opening of the sixth petal is this type of vacating possible for a higher disciple, perhaps a teacher of some kind who knows how this is done. We look at Apollonius of Tyana and the initiate Jesus, and there appears to have been such a vacating. We look at the still more powerful example of the initiate Jesus in relation to the great Lord Maitreya. There was definitely a vacating of the mechanism so that the Christ could be in the vehicle, could take possession of the vehicle of Jesus and offer his teaching in a way that was familiar enough to be accepted. I'm sure there are many examples, but the opening of the Virgo petal, it is Virgo from one point of view. From another point of view, it could be considered the Pisces petal, and that would make sense as well in terms of the mediumship and the sensitivity. That is a necessity before such conscious possession can be taken.
DK says, few mediums know the technique governing the passing in or out of an informing entity, nor do they know how to carry on this work in such a way that never for a moment are they unaware of what they themselves are doing and the purpose of their activity. Definitely and with purpose, they lend their body temporarily to another soul for service, preserving their own integrity all the time. They are the onlooker. I often wonder how much the onlooking initiate Jesus learned when the Lord Maitreya took possession of his vehicle. There was so much to learn, and he had his full faculties about him. So they preserved their own integrity, such ones who vacate in favor of a higher soul preserve their own integrity all the time. The highest expression of this type of activity was giving of his body, was the giving of his body by the disciple. He was actually an initiate of the third degree, giving of his body by the disciple Jesus for the use of the Christ. Now, this will not be easily understood by many. It is in the word service that the whole story lies and the safeguard. When this true mediumship is better understood, we shall have the medium passing out of his body in full waking consciousness through the orifice at the top of the head, and not, as is now the case in the majority of instances, through the solar plexus, with no preservation of awareness of the transaction nor any recollection of what has transpired. There's also another exit near the heart. And different people of different degrees of attainment use different exits. So these are some of the technicalities of the process, and we see how successfully it was used in the Christ Jesus phenomena. But how shall that be conveyed to people who think of Jesus as the one and only Son of God? The whole area of occultism will have somehow to be explained, if not in depth, at least in principle. That is where those in the new group of world servers who are teachers come into the picture. Okay. So mediums in general are ignorant of the method and of the implications of the method. What can be accomplished by it, and what is permissible, what is not. They simply slip out via the solar plexus. And that is not conducive to the type of conscious Virgoan, if I may call it that, mediumship, which we are seeking to cultivate. Some astrologers have attempted to create a chart for the birth of the initiate Jesus, Jeshua, or whatever his name would be in the Aramaic language. And I think I know of one that's quite good, I think. And it shows him, of course, being born in the sign Capricorn, but also with Virgo rising. So he was, you know, in a way, born of the Virgin being the sign of purity that would be found on the ascendant. At the same time, we can see that connection of the sign Virgo with the sixth petal, whose full development gives the second initiation and whose full development gives the possibility of participating in such a serviceable process as we are here discussing. So more and more this will be known, and the usefulness of various occult or esoteric procedures will be the knowledge of many. And then we shall not misinterpret the way at present we seem so often to do. Okay, interesting that he begins this book with so much about psychism, since the book was begun in 1934, or at least the essays collected begin with an essay from 1934. There is no assurance that the masters knew the second phase of the war would precipitate physically. As a matter of fact, I'm sure they hoped otherwise. They hoped there would be a sufficient response from humanity and from aspirants and disciples to render effective the goodwill which was intended to sweep over humanity and obviate the precipitation of the second phase of the war. So maybe they did begin with subjects that were not war-centered, we might say. Yet, all the while, the obsessing forces were gathering. And Master Moria deals a lot with the epidemic of obsession, as he calls it. Yeah. I'm in a situation where somehow the lighting in this temple is making very, very dim the speaking image, but that's okay. What's more important are the words by the Tibetan and maybe some helpful commentary directing us to associated and illuminating ideas. Okay. I'm just not quite, there we go. Okay. We shall then have the temporary entrance of a new tenant along the line of a synchronous vibration through the entrance in the head and the subsequent use of the instrument of the loaned body in service of some kind or another. Now, this will be one of the techniques of the New Age. And we'll show a method of connecting higher points of tension with lower points of tension, higher entities with lower entities and through lower entities. It will be a method of communication in these air signs, which will be coming into prominence during the Age of Aquarius, new modes of communication will be essential, and we shall have the growth of telepathic rapport and kind of a internal spiritual television, broadcasting of images through the energy system of the human being to be received by the energy system of another human being or to of a group to another group. New methods will appear, and here is just one of them. But D.E.K. goes on here, but this procedure will never be followed in order to satisfy idle curiosity. Maybe there's a type of scientific curiosity which will be used to confirm that such methods do exist, or an equally idle grief, meaning that when you lose somebody, their physical body disappears and you have been attached to their physical presence, and one hopes to get into contact with them somehow, perhaps through a medium. Much cheating and deception goes on there. And it's not so likely that the one that is apparently lost will be in any condition to enter the rather refined vehicle of some type of intelligent medium who can engage successfully in this process. So It will not be based on idle curiosity, though maybe scientific verification will be important, or an equally idle grief, which is unnecessary once we know the constitution of the worlds and the vibratory levels to which the deceased may refocus, or on which to which the deceased may repair and then refocus there. Nor will it be based on personal loneliness and self-pity. It's only for purposes of the divine plan to advance service to the divine plan. At present, many of the lower kinds of mediums are exploited by the curious or unhappy public, you know, people who have lost someone, apparently lost, and those peculiar human beings whose consciousness is centered entirely below the diaphragm, apparently not very much found today. And whose solar plexus is indeed their brain, as it is the brain of the animal, are forced to act as mediums. To satisfy the love of sensation or desire for comfort of their almost equally unintelligent fellow man. So the whole spectacle is nothing to be admired and maybe filled with fakery in some cases, or with glamour and misrepresentation in another. It's a very old Atlantean way of semi-unconscious contact or entirely unconscious contact. So the methods will have to be sanctioned. Correct methods will have to be taught and guarded, and the age-old, unintelligent, instinctual methods will have to be forsworn. They will no longer be seen as desirable, and they will be discouraged. To have a solar plexus as a brain, well, it's not what we call thinking. It's very much in the chemomanasic field, and one is prompted to reach out and interact with life on the basis of solar plexus sensitivity, solar plexus desire, solar plexus emotion, attraction, repulsion. It's not really thinking things through. Now, I do see something most peculiar going on here. I think the Golden Gate Bridge is totally eclipsing the picture. Let's see if anything can be done about that. Maybe not. Here's some grass. Not much better. Here are the northern lights. Maybe a little better. Maybe. Well, Tuya and I often go to the far north of Finland above the Arctic Circle. Well, maybe not so often anymore. And there are these amazing, colorful Devic displays do occur. And sometimes they seem to be quite intelligent. They seem to give symbolism or prompt in the onlooker the sense of the symbolic. Sometimes the sky is red for hours. There's the northern lights display in a certain manner. Let's go on. At the same time, there are mediums of a very much higher order whose lives are offered in service to advanced souls on the other side of the veil, who give themselves so that their fellow men may learn of them. I'm thinking that maybe Dr. Anna Kingsford, who was a friend of H.P. Blavatsky and who opened herself for certain kinds of transmissions, was one such. There's a very intelligent discussion or transmission on the nature of evil offered in a treatise on cosmic fire in a footnote. And it obviously was not Anna Kingsford speaking. She had relinquished the vehicle for a high soul who was elaborating the perspective of such high souls on the problem of evil. So this is a much better situation. Thus, on both sides of the veil of separation, are souls aided and given opportunity to hear or serve. And DK is rounding the story for us so that we do not assume that all mediumship is suspect and useless and, you know, degenerate. I think somewhere he refers to certain types of people as Atlantean degenerates. I had an interesting experience once where I actually went to such a psychic. It was in the gypsy group, and I was young, and I was just experimenting. And she had a different terminology for what theosophy was revealing in a higher sort of way. And I think she was pretty accurate about some things and inaccurate about others. I don't think there was any other entity involved, just her own mediumship, her own tuning in to whatever source it might have been. But I don't think, in general, there is any profit to go in the door where the sign offers you psychic readings. I did a lot of investigation of all this in my later 20s and early 30s, and I did find some very, or at least one, very accurate psychic whose predictions, prognostications, a general evaluation have proven to be true without forcing over the years. And this lady also used a kind of palmistry. It seems to trace etheric happenings or etheric possibilities at different ages. So it was a combination of approaches, and I found that overall, over the years, the memory of it helpful. But, you know, with age and discrimination and a growing sense of what is useful, I don't think I would be choosing to seek information in that way any longer. Ah, yes, there was another man, too, that I kind of tested out, and he was, I think, accurate and gave the whole issue of past lives and their growth into present developments a certain legitimacy. I felt he was on to something and was clarifying in the matter of developing the trajectory of past lives. Now, in the new esoteric schools, we're going to learn about the methods of evoking past lives, especially the ones that are relevant to our present situation, in order to have a deeper understanding. So it will be part of the curriculum. Right now, we may delve a little bit into the personal unconscious, or maybe even the Carl Jung's province, the collective unconscious. And we may anticipate some future types of situations, and maybe with a little bit of accuracy even. But the true scientific approach is what we are seeking, so that, in a sense, you might say, it works every time. You know, you have the technique, you have the method. And you don't have to allow fanciful thoughts to possess your mind and possibly lead you astray, you know, because glamour is lurking very close in these kinds of inquiries. Generally, I've found when there is a real need, then the method to fulfill that need does somehow appear. Okay, but even these more advanced mediums, he says, but these two would profit by a more intelligent training and by a more accurate understanding of the technique of their work and the organization of their bodies. They would be better channels and more dependable intermediaries. So we can see that there's going to be a fair bit of scientific training for the reliable psychics of the future. And, you know, we're told that Master Hilarion is undertaking work with them. Now, it flashes on me that Master Hilarion and the Master R will be involved in the Occidental Esoteric School, which has not yet been formed, and probably will be formed in the sixth root race. So there is a representative of the fifth ray, Hilarion, and one who can focus on the seventh ray, because he has spent so much time as a seventh ray soul, even though his monad must necessarily be that on the third ray. And the two of them together will be in a position to help the psychics be properly trained through clear mind and organization of the bodies. So better ways of access are coming. And we, you know, with all these things, we just have to be patient. It would be nice, we sometimes think, to have methods and techniques delivered into our hands so we could simply know at will now when we want to. But all of this has a certain timing in relation to our consciousness and the supervision of the angel of the presence over our development. So the destiny is charted, but the way there is subject to variation and adaptability. And we just have to participate in the process of inevitable improvement in a patient manner. Looks like I can't understand it. I had worked out a way whereby the, maybe that will help a little. Seems to help a little bit. Going on. Above all, functioning with two keyboards here because of the lazy letter E. Above all, let the psychics in the world today grasp the necessity of controlling and of not being controlled. Let them realize that all that they do can be done by any trained disciple of the ageless wisdom, should the occasion warrant it and circumstances justify such an expenditure of force. You know, there's a kind of pride that accompanies unintelligent psychism. People, you know, tend to hold on to these very ancient faculties as if they represent some high degree of attainment. But it isn't so. It's simply a recapturing of ancient animal capabilities. And at will, a true initiate can utilize these. But again, it has to be justifiable in terms of the divine plan. Psychics are easily deceived. Well, let's see. We don't want to be deceived. We don't want to be deluded. We don't want to mislead ourselves through some glamorous fancy. We want none of that. And I'm shifting myself just a little bit here because I think the light can shine better. Okay, so psychics are easily deceived. For example, it is, of course, obvious that on the astral plane, there is a thought form of myself, your Tibetan brother. All who have received the disciple's degree, monthly instructions, all who read the books which I have sent out into the world with the aid of AAB, all who are working in my personal group of disciples have naturally and automatically aided in the construction of this astral thought form. It is not me, nor is it linked to me, nor do I use it. I have definitely dissociated myself from it and do not employ it as a means of contacting those I teach. For I work from choice entirely on mental levels, thereby undoubtedly limiting my range of contacts, but increasing the effectiveness of my work. This astral thought form is a distortion of me and my work, needless to say, and resembles an animated, galvanized shell. Now, at some point, I don't know if it's what's coming up, but he says that you can expect from this thought form, when you communicate with it, good words of mediocre cheer. You would think it would be mediocre words of good cheer, but the way it's expressed, I think, is good words of mediocre cheer. In other words, some kind of encouragement that the disciples who have contributed, or aspirants who have contributed to the formation of this thought form, long for. They long for the Tibetan to lift them up, cheer them up, make them more assured, more confident, more happy about what they're doing. And consequently, the thought form reflects that kind of wish. It is interesting to try to discriminate, even in the question of artistic renderings of the masters, which ones carry the note and suggest the status of the master, and which ones are a bit like cheap comedy or very childish. He warns us about the cheap comedy of certain movements that represent or claim to represent the masters. And they tend to have, you know, kind of rosy cheeks and look otherworldly altogether. They don't look like graduate human beings who have achieved wisdom and are sharing that wisdom. Anyway, DK goes to considerable lengths here to tell you that he really doesn't use this thought form, no matter how beguiling the thought form may seem, how attractive. And contact with it, rendering a result which is undesirable, that people feel special. He always warns against speciality. One of the glamours there is probably a sixth-rate glamour, the glamour of special selection, the glamour of speciality. He says, don't fall into that, because we're all more or less average, he says, and if we think of ourselves as higher than average, we run a risk of being beglamored. So, good words of mediocre cheer. I hope I'm correct. I hope I'm giving you correct information. Sometimes I know I don't remember everything. Mediocre cheer. One. Where is it found? Discipleship, Volume 1. From the, he's talking about this particular thought form. Okay, it's a snare. And and he says, from speaking of the thought form, every time anyone sees this thought form of me and responds to it, he increases its strength and power. From its magnetic aura, my disciples and followers must free themselves, for it is but man's thought of me, and not I myself. It can sidetrack and delude you. It can speak good words of mediocre cheer and encouragement. I kind of left that out. Good words of mediocre cheer and encouragement. But they are not my words. And I would have you, and this I would have you bear in mind. I don't know who he's talking to here, but your sixth ray personality and your first ray astral body make you prone to this beautiful yet deceptive force flowing from an illusory form. Well, you know, when Ulysses or Odysseus undertook his journey, or was it Jason with the golden fleece? One of those Greek adventurers, either coming home from the Trojan War or venturing after the golden fleece, the sirens posed the danger. The extremely beautiful singers, mostly in those cases women, because the men were the warriors and the seekers and adventurers. And they would sing in such a way that the sailors could not resist and would be destroyed in their approach on the rocks which surrounded the place where from which the sirens were singing. So sometimes it's hard to resist an internally beautiful situation, which is nevertheless deceptive, illusory, dangerous, and maybe there comes a time when disciples experience that kind of lure. You know how it is with a fishing lure. The problem is you get caught on the hook. You follow the attractive colors. And the next thing you know, you have been seized by the hook. So many are the snares on this path of discipleship. Too much concentration upon the Tibetan as a kind of glorified personality can lead to this ensnarement in the magnetic aura of a glamorous thought form. And those thought forms are out there of all the masters. And people, as we know, they think they are communing with the real master. You can't convince them otherwise. And the masters are speaking those encouraging words, the good words of mediocre cheer and encouragement. And naturally, the disciple doesn't want to relinquish that kind of encouragement when from the master he's liable to get a few words tersely delivered and to the point and not flattering in any sense of the word. So the Tibetan is clarifying here in discipleship one, how he does work, page 567 and 568, and he's not here to cheer his students along the way. Maybe a few dire cases, but not in general. So we have to grow up in our method of pursuing the path and not expect to have our hand held all the way, at least in the conventional human hand-holding way. What does he say? That we want to make masters out of you. So you have to master those effects in life which are difficult. You have to master them on your own. And we're not there to lift you through every difficult circumstance. I remember one of his disciples was really under attack by those on the left-hand path, and maybe more serious evil types. And DK basically said to her, I could help you, I could protect you, and thereby you would learn nothing. So sometimes we're left to our own devices, right? And we have to say, well, now that's fair. It's not unfair. We can't expect the parent to do everything for us, and we cannot expect our spiritual parent, the master, to do everything for us. And that's what toughens us up a bit. We don't lose our sensitivity, but we become stronger on the path and able to handle our own life and to undergo those tests which ever must be taken alone and which will raise us to a higher point of tension. Okay, so we continue then with the next section. And just a moment. Okay, so we'll continue. It resembles this thought form that causes so much trouble. It did actually damage two of the disciples in DK's group quite severely, and he had to do quite a bit of repair work. Probably the two disciples who fell victim to it had quite a bit of ambition, and they both had a lot of the sixth ray. Matter of fact, they both had sixth ray personalities. There was LTSK 36513, and there was IBS 16463. Maybe the rays tell us something about the tendency to succumb to that thought form. And naturally, DK was called upon to do repair work and, you know, to preserve the integrity of the group. Now, because there is in this form, he says, much emotional substance and also a certain amount of mental substance, it can make a wide appeal, and its validity is such that, like all shells, we call them astral shells, for instance, which are contacted in a seance room, it masquerades as myself, and where the intuition is unawakened, the illusion is complete and real. So these are dangerous possibilities, or at least misleading possibilities, to be encountered upon the path. It really calls for a test of discernment, a test of discrimination. It calls for the exercise of the straight knowledge in a way different from the way he describes it more cosmically in the beginning of the Glamour book. Now, both of these individuals who succumbed, were very devoted. Devotion can be a useful thing and can be one of the series of three qualities which are encountered at the second initiation: dedication, glamour, solved by devotion. But it also can mislead and tie a person to some unworthy goal or objective for a long time, as in the case of the students of Bucyrus in the Gemini labor of Hercules, the false teacher. The devotees can therefore tune in with great facility on this illusory form and be completely deceived. Its vibration is of a relatively high order. Its mental effect is like a beautiful parody of myself and serves to place the deluded devotees in touch with the scroll of the astral light, which is the reflection of the Akashic records. Now that is interesting. It's good to make that discrimination between the true Akashic records and the reflection of them known as the astral light. Its mental effect is like a beautiful parody of myself and serves to place the deluded devotees in touch with the scroll of the astral light, which is the reflection of the Akashic records. These latter are the eternal scroll whereon the plan for our world is inscribed, and from which those of us who teach gather our data and our information. That's the real Akashic record, not the same as the astral light. This, the astral light, distorts and steps down, because this is a distorted image and functions in the three worlds of form and has no source of validity higher than those of form. It has in it the seeds of separativeness and of disaster. Forms of flattery are sent out from it. Ideas of separateness, those thoughts which feed ambition and which foster love of power, and those germs of desire and personal longing which divide groups, emerge from contact with it. The results, to those who are deceived thereby, are sad. And he had, you know, an example there in his own groups. I can't remember whether the two people afflicted were actually in the observers of reality groups or group. But they were in one of those groups of nine. And by the year 1934, some of these various groups were already in process of learning and functioning, not as DK intended them to function later, but functioning as groups and being taught accordingly. So it was a lesson to everybody in discrimination, in straight knowledge, in discernment, in intuition. It was a lesson. I would like to point out also that trance mediumship, as it is called, must inevitably be superseded by that mediumship which is offered by the man or woman who is clairvoyant or clairaudient on the astral plane, and who therefore, in full waking consciousness and with the physical brain alert and active, can offer himself as an intermediary between men in physical plane bodies, and therefore blind and deaf on the subtler levels, and those who, having discarded their bodies, are cut off from physical communication. Sometimes, you know, you wonder, are these disincarnated people not coming through somehow when the urge to do so serves the plan and is inspired by a great feeling of necessity? You would think that that might be possible. I'm thinking about Hamlet, you know. And an apparition had been spotted on the ramparts of the castle. And it pretty well begins with him holding a dialogue with that apparition, who is, in a way, the ghost of his father, who had been murdered by his uncle Claudius. And it was maybe an Elizabethan idea that when there is great urgency to communicate with a still embodied person, it is possible to reach through, and this would determine how it is that ghosts are allowed to appear. The spirit, this ghost, this apparition, had to communicate to Hamlet that he had been murdered, and that his uncle Claudius was the murderer, the usurper of the throne. It was a great task to thus communicate, and there was a great urgency about it. So maybe under certain circumstances, the old stories are true, you can get through, but normally not, it appears. So eventually the clairvoyance or clairaudience, which is under control, is substituted for the unconscious mediumistic approach. And the trance, of course, indicates that for the most part, under Cancer and Pisces and Neptune, that the medium is simply an automaton and has no real consciousness of what is happening and no ability to guide the process. A bit like an empty house. But when the faculties are developed, then such people can become conscious conduits to link the two non-communicating areas together. So this type of psychic can communicate with both groups, and their value and their usefulness as mediums is beyond computation when they are single-minded, unselfish, pure, and dedicated to service. I'm recalling an episode in the book, The Initiate, where Justin Morward Haig, the name given to the master in that book, is in a cemetery and noticing the grief of a young boy over the loss of his mother. And Haig offers himself to communicate with the mother, and he does, and basically conveys a message of consolation to the boy. It's the real thing. But Haig was a master, whatever his real name was. And he could place himself at will between two worlds, which normally do not communicate. Okay, but it takes some training. And DK tells us, but in the training to which they subject themselves, they must avoid the present negative methods. And instead of, quote, sitting for development in a blank and waiting silence, they should endeavor to work positively as souls, remembering or remaining in remaining in conscious and intelligent possession of the lower mechanism of their bodies. They must know which center in that body they use while working psychically, and they must learn to look out as souls upon the world of illusion in which they are undertaking to work. From their high and pure position, let them see clearly, hear truly, and report accurately, and so serve their age and generation and make the astral plane a familiar and well-known place of activity, accustoming mankind to a state of existence wherein are found their fellow men experiencing, living, and following the path. So we avoid these old methods of passivity, and we work as souls, and we offer to our fellow human beings something of real value, something of real value. Okay, so DK tells us a little more. Let's see how far we are here. Well, there's quite a bit, to go, but I think, we can make it to esoteric schools and disciplines, I think. He says, I cannot hear right concerning the technique of that training, you know, whereby even the intelligent psychic can receive more training. The subject is too vast for a brief article. I do say with emphasis that a more careful and wise training is needed and a more intelligent use of the knowledge which is available if sought after. I appeal to all who are interested in the growth of psychic knowledge to study and think and experiment and teach and learn until such time as the entire level of psychic phenomena has been lifted out of its present ignorant, speculative, and negative position to one of a potent assurance, proved technique, and spiritual expression. So maybe none of us will become immediately psychics of a high degree simply through study, thinking, and experimentation and teaching, but we'll be on our way. I appeal to such movements as the psychical research societies in the world and the vast spiritualistic movement, you know, sponsored to a great extent by the Seventh Ray, to lay the emphasis on divine expression and not so much on phenomena. Let them approach their researches into the realm of energy. Let them approach the subject from the angle of service and carry their researches into the realm of energy and cease to pander so much to the public. In New York long ago, one of my colleagues and I were doing some research on the death and dying experience, and we did venture into the Psychical Research Society of New York, and we met a very interesting individual. I think he was pretty much on the Seventh Ray, a scientific type, and learned a few things about what he had seen. Okay. Now, I want to get a bracket back so that I do things correctly. All right. So he's asking that our motive not be a pandering to the public, if we happen to be, you know, mediumistically inclined, psychically inclined, but rather that we have service and research in our minds. Service and carry their researches. Study the subject, approach the subject from the angle of service, and carry their researches into the realm of energy and cease to pander so much to the public. you know, the ever-clamoring public under the impulse of curiosity, idle curiosity. And he says, idle grief as well. And many idle personality motives. The opportunity offered them, such sensitive people, is great. And the need of their work is vital because, you know, these two worlds, the astral plane and the physical plane, have to be connected for greater understanding of the structure of the points of tension in which we live. The service rendered has been real and essential, but if these, you know, the psychical research groups, but if these movements are to avail themselves of the coming inflow of spiritual energy, they must shift their attention into the realm of true values. The training of the intellect and the presenting to the world of a group of intelligent psychic should be a main objective, and the astral plane will then be, for them, only a stage on the way to that world wherein the spiritual guides and masters are found, and from whence all souls go forth into incarnation, and all souls return from the place of experience and experiment. In other words, their astral connectivity will lead to mental connectivity, will lead to connectivity with the higher mental plane and the soul. So Master DK is asking for a reorientation. And an increase or an elevation in the sense of values which animates these sensitive people. The connection must be made. And people, you know, with strong Pisces, Virgo, Neptune, not exclusively so, but they will have the tendency towards the necessary sensitivity. They just have to be trained and intelligent about it. Okay. It might be asked what ground this training should cover. I would suggest that teaching should be given as to the nature of man and the purpose and objectives of the soul. Training can be offered as to the technique of expression, and careful instruction also given as to the use of the centers in the etheric body and in the development of the ability to preserve inviolate the attitude of the positive onlooker, who is always the directing, controlling factor. There will have to be careful analysis of the type and character of the psychic, and then the application of differentiated and suitable methods so that he may progress with the least hindrance. Training schools and classes which seek to develop the student must be graded according to his point in evolution and his passing into a group, optimistically hoping that something will happen to him whilst in it, will have to cease. So a much more mature attitude, a more academic attitude in a way, is required in this training. He doesn't tell everything about it, no, he cannot do that. But he can do something, and he is offering us a deeper understanding of this type of service, which is going to grow in its frequency, accuracy, potency, etc. And all of this, I think, as a method of going more deeply into knowledge during the Aquarian Age, which is an age of knowing rather than an age of simply believing. Because with belief, well, you can believe anything, but when you're presented through straight knowledge with the facts as they are, this is really of value. Now, that's the goal for the intelligent psychic, who even now is doing some good but can do better under the proper training. The goal for the low-grade negative psychic should be the training of the mind and the closing of the solar plexus until such time as he can function as a true mediator. Remember what was said earlier about the color yellow being useful in closing off the solar plexus, because it is such a strong mental Mercurian color. So if this involves the temporary cessation of his mediumistic powers and consequently of his commercial exploitation, he would perhaps use them commercially, then so much the better for him, viewing him as an immortal soul with a spiritual destiny and usefulness. A temporary change in the source of income, rather illegitimately gathered, is not a bad thing and protects the future, where his sensitivity will be employed in a more serviceable manner. The instruction given to the intelligent medium and psychic should lead him to a full understanding of himself and of his powers. It should develop those powers without risk and with care. I remember DK working with the very first individual listed in the Dyna One book, Discipleship in the New Age book. And DK, in order to balance a overly intellectual approach, sought to train the man in psychism. I think it was, a BSD who was that individual. Let's just see if it's possible to find him. These are talks to disciples. And in Dyna One, I'm just searching personal instructions. It was BSD, each letter of which has a meaning in terms of a keynote for the life. He was a third-ray soul, very intellectual, but DK assured him that it was more his devotion, which attracted the master, and not so much his intellectuality. Okay. So to the more intelligent psychic or medium, a clear idea of how to develop the powers and stabilize them, and how to generate a positive control of these powers rather than a more supine position that something will happen to me or for me. Here's clairaudient and clairvoyant and clairaudient powers should gradually be perfected, and the right interpretation of what he sees and contacts on the plane of illusion, the astral plane. Now, usually the term illusion is used in connection with the mental plane, but in a broader sense, illusion is all that misleads, including glamour and Maya. And the right interpretation of what he sees and contacts on the plane of illusion, the astral plane, should be cultivated. So two different methods of training for two types of sensitives, one type more more intelligent than the other, more experienced, more in control. And when dealing with our own inevitably growing sensitivity, we have to remember what DK said, so we do not become ensnared with various glamours and illusions and undesirable myopic habit patterns. Of course, we are in a position, perhaps, having studied these matters with him, to know already the necessities and to be warned about tendencies towards exploitation, tendencies towards pride, self-satisfaction, overconfidence in oneself in terms of what one imparts. In other words, if our eyes are off our personal self, and we do gradually develop the sensitivity, we will be in a better position to use it in service. Thus, we shall gradually find emerging in the world a large body of trained psychics whose powers are understood and who function on the astral plane with as much intelligence as they function on the physical plane, and who are preparing themselves for the expression of the higher psychic powers, spiritual perception, and telepathy. Well, you know, on the very first subplane, we do have this city that we're calling telepathy. And if we're in the higher mind of the causal body, spiritual perception is possible in its first developmental phase. Later, with triadal consciousness, greater spiritual perception, more impersonal spiritual perception will be possible. These people will constitute eventually a body of linking souls, mediating between those who cannot see and hear on the astral plane because they are the prisoners of the physical body, and those who are equally the prisoners of the astral plane, having passed over, let us say, lacking the physical response apparatus. So this is an important group. And I think, you know, the oracles of the past and the sibyls and the soothsayers and so forth. Excuse me. Were of this type. The great need, therefore, is not that we should cease to consult and train our psychics and mediums. Maybe he's speaking from the point of view of the hierarchy as he uses this word, our, but that we should train them rightly and guard them intelligently, and so link through their means the two worlds of the physical and astral. This is what has to be done. So this last program has been focused on the training of the psychics. And maybe some of us are involved in this type of sensitivity, and we will need to know how we can be trained for greater receptivity, more accurate receptivity, more plan-identified receptivity and expression. Always it will take some degree of patience and very careful work. Realizing, of course, that Rome was not built in a day and the higher faculties are not prepared, accessed and prepared for use in a short period of time. If there is any sense that this ability occurred immediately, this happened immediately. DK tells us we are overlooking the long period of unconscious preparation, or maybe some conscious preparation in other incarnations, which made the sudden onset of the of these powers available to us. There are just so many types of knowledges, and maybe we don't need them all. Master DK said, look, when I need to know something along the scientific line, I consult one of my brothers or fellow hierarchical members along the fifth ray line. It's just efficient to do that because no one can cover everything. The Christ himself cannot be considered universally omniscient. He may have close to a degree of omniscience with respect to our planetary functions, maybe our planetary chain. Is it the entire planetary scheme with which, in relation to which he is omniscient? I mean, who knows? Someone knows. But all of us have a ring pass knot in our present state of emanation. All of us have limitations in manifestation, maybe not limitations in reality, in the very essential reality which being is. Being is one, immovable, all-pervading, and identical in all. So there we don't have limitation. Being is not limited. Anything perceived is. It doesn't mean that it's not illusory in terms of truth, value, and so forth. But what we perceive is, at least as a perception, it has being and ultimately is being. So there's an old statement in philosophy shared by the idealistic philosophers that to be is to be perceived. To be is to be perceived. Ultimately, the highest sort of being is not perceived. It simply is. And no possibility of distinctive perception exists within it, because there is no within and there is no without. It's hard to gather the meaning of absoluteness. We can't name it, we can't define it, and even the highest intelligence in our universe is, I say anyway, infinitely removed from the ultimate nature of being as the absolute. Now one has to ponder over these things and see if it rings the proverbial bell, you know. Probably at some point it will. There are so many subtle apprehensions that are possible. And basically, this whole thing is a story of our increasing sensitivity. DK has all this amazing sensitivity, but he treats it as a rather normal state of affairs. He doesn't make a big deal out of it. He said, yeah, these are my abilities. Yes, I can psychometrize the book you've just written through the formation of a intervening symbol, which captures everything the book is. Yes, I can spend a certain amount of energy to get through to you. Yes, I can appear and disappear in my formal nature due to the control of light, substance, many, many things the masters can do, but they don't treat it, they don't treat those many things as abnormal or freakish. They are normal developments lying ahead of all emanations who are on the path of retraction, emanative retraction. So they set an example for us, and they help us avoid the kind of, I guess I can only call it spiritually inclined hysteria, which overtakes so many when they draw a sharp line of division between normal life and spiritual life. In fact, there is no sharp line. It's a continuum. It's a gradual development, which is possible. And thus the the people will accept the masters if they don't appear freakish and abnormal. And so much of the other world that nobody can relate to them. I'm always amazed when I see how masters may approach people. There is this story maybe in the initiate of, well, I mean, we have our own theosophical story of Master K.H. Knocking on the door, basically, and coming into a room where Alice Bailey was home from church and the others were gone, and basically treating the whole thing as a normal occurrence. And I guess there must have been something in Alice Bailey which recognized him. And then the master named Justin Morward Haig in the initiate series, not his real name, I'm sure, basically came and sat down on a bench next to the person he wanted to communicate with and began talking about, you know, who he was and what could be done and what kind of relationship they may have had, and established in a very normal way the productive ongoing pattern. So we should remember that too. We're going to be dealing with a lot of people who just don't believe what we have to say, because it just seems beyond the pale, and they've been trained in certain doctrines until the doctrines had become rigid thought forms, unbending, unyielding, permanent in the thought life. So how do we get beyond that? And I would say not by any freakish and outlandishly otherworldly expression, but just through reason, reasonableness, we might say. And then we can apply these higher powers as we develop them in a reasonable and acceptable manner. And we'll arouse no instantaneous opposition from those who are frightened, suspicious, and who have never thought of these possibilities. The persuasive approach of the second ray of love wisdom and the utilization of a sanctified normality, these are the methods that we have to use. And over the next years before the Great Conclave, and even during the maybe another 90 something years that will intervene before the Aquarian age begins technically and astronomically, the factor of spiritual propagation of ideas, or the propagation of spiritual ideas, will be necessitated. You know, we call it propaganda. It has a negative tone, but it is the propagation of useful ideas, and they're spreading and they're explaining in reasonable methods, reasonable ways. So in our next life, on our next incarnation, probably most of us will have an incarnation before the technical onset of the Aquarian age. We're still going to be in the business of acquainting an ever more receptive humanity to the inner, with the inner realities. And DK is giving us very sound common sense about how to go about it. So, you know, let's read it, let's assimilate it. DK talked to one of his disciples, telling her that the words of many books were stored in her causal body. Maybe, you know, in the memory factors of the atomic triangle. In any case, what we impress upon our minds at this point can definitely stay with us in future incarnations. And I assume that so many of us, if we stick with it, are pledged disciples at the least, working towards the state of ashramic attraction and partial inclusion, which we call accepted disciple or accepted discipleship. So this is a practical book. There's so much that gives us the details of the hidden science. And there are some of DK's writings which really says, and what do you do with all this? What do I expect of you? How are you to act? What are you to cultivate? How are you to approach others who are in need of some form of this information? And we need that too, don't we? And over the next 5 years, before the Great Conclave, we really need it, because the last-ditch fight of the forces of obstruction are underway, and they will intensify in the attempt to prevent the externalization and reappearance from occurring in a timely manner and in the way they should occur. The Black Lodge wants desperately to know what is the divine plan as the White Lodge conceives it. And a lot of the work of the White Lodge is to prevent the Black Lodge from finding out and thus being more successful in obstructing the proper emergence. So in our next work, we'll deal with esoteric schools and disciplines. And of course, many of those who gravitate towards esoteric schools will be in some way in their consciousness sensitive. And all must possess at least the seed of synthesis and a good, fairly sharp mind. The factor of discrimination must be present. They have been led from darkness to light to a certain extent, and from the unreal to the real, and those two especially. And as they climb the ladder of initiation, they are being led into a situation of death as it gives way to immortality. We're surrounded by the death of consciousness constantly, and we have to enter the immortal, godlike, inner godlike consciousness. And then there are other transitions, but in the new schools, at least the light, at least the real, and at least some progress towards a living consciousness and not a stifled consciousness. Okay, so here we are on page 15, basically. And we've gone from page 10 to 15. I'm not exactly sure how long this has taken because I experienced a little difficulty along the way. And so the day on which we have done this is the 26th. And we have concentrated in this program on the training of the psychics, on the training of the sensitives, and how to render them more effective, more intelligent, more useful to the divine plan. So this would be the end of 03A, and it's on the 26th of June, and it works from page 10 to 15, and we'll begin with 04A on whatever day we undertake this, whether later tonight here or not, and we'll go from page 15 to let's see what. If every two-hour program covers five pages, okay, that would at least call for an expenditure of energy to finish the book, which is not outrageous. Okay, friends, thank you. And many blessings. Lots of love to everyone. And let's deepen our studies and deepen our meditation and find the ways for us best to serve. Let's find the ways, given our particular abilities and the abilities of our group and groups, best to serve. So, be in touch with you soon. And thank you.